You can subscribe to The Spectator for 12 weeks for only £12 for our print and online editions, plus get 6 months of digital access free to The Telegraph. Go to spectator.co.uk/telegraph.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Katie Balls and I'm joined by Fraser Nelson and James Forsyth. So after days of deliberations over whether or not Greater Manchester would go into Tier 3, we are heading that way. However, it's not with agreement from the regional leaders. After the Community Secretary, Robert Jenrick, sent a deadline overnight of midday today to come up with a decision, no agreement was reached, and the government have decided to press on anyway. We now have a row over who is to blame and how exactly this is going to play out. James, is the government going to be able to enforce Tier 3 when it doesn't have the backing of several figures, such as, of course, Andy Burnham, the mayor for Greater Manchester?
I think the question is whether the financial package the government is offering is enough to ensure that the local authority essentially helps to implement it. The reason that Number 10 have not imposed Tier 3 on Manchester before now is twofold. One is the politics of it, that, you know, the idea of Westminster dictating to the one of the largest cities in the north what it is going to do would not look good optically. I think there is a fear that public compliance would be lower if there was a sense that this is something that had been imposed on the city. And secondly, on a kind of practical level, you need the local authority to be actively enforcing these rules. And I think the sense is that if the local authorities don't want these rules in place, they would be unlikely to be assiduous, go above and beyond the call of duty in trying to enforce them. So I think that those are the two tensions here. But I also think we see a preview, we've seen, of two coming national debates. One is the kind of argument Andy Burnham uses most often, which is, you know, why, if businesses are being told to close by the government, why is the support this time round less generous than it was first time round? I think that is going to be a theme throughout the autumn and the winter in every place that gets shut down. Then the second argument, which I think you've seen Andy Burnham using, and being used more by some of the Tory MPs, notably Graham Brady, who are opposing the restrictions in Manchester, is like, well, how do we know these will work? And this is still in the capacity of the NHS to deal with. So why are you taking these steps now? And I think you see the two flanks on which the government is going to have to fight in trying to justify its COVID restrictions in the coming weeks and months in this fight in Manchester.
Yes, Fraser, let's talk about Andy Burnham's reasons for resisting the measures Number 10 has been trying to impose for some days now. Previously, I think there was a sense that it was mainly a financial situation. So Andy Burnham has been calling for a return to full furlough rather than what the Chancellor has been offering for the new phase. But we're also hearing from him now, I think more frequently, questions about how bad the rate is around Greater Manchester and whether the figures being put forward by the government are actually true to reality. What's going on there in terms of ICU and also just the rate of infection? Is there reason to doubt what the government is saying?
Yes, I'm afraid we seem to be getting into a game of political spin here, where the government is really talking up the risk of infections and indeed Manchester's hospitals being overrun. It was saying yesterday that hospital admissions are doubling every 7 days in Manchester. Now, that simply isn't true, I'm afraid. They might once have doubled in 7 days, but if you look at the actual rate of infections by the date of the infections rather than the date that they were reported, you see that infections are Manchester peaked at the beginning of the month, probably around the 3rd of October, and have been falling ever since. So if infections are falling quite fast, then why would you put the city back into lockdown? Also, look at the stories about Manchester hospitals. There was a report over the weekend that the hospitals are being overrun. The ICU capacity intensive care unit was really high at 82%. Well, 82% sounds quite high, but if you look at normal ICU usage, that was about the average for the last 2 or 3 years in Manchester. That's because a hospital doesn't want to have too many unused intensive care units, so it always wants to keep them at that level of capacity. And if there's a surge, they add more capacity. In Liverpool, for example, we heard last week that their 60 intensive care units were close to full. Well, if they get full, there's surge capacity to add another 30 units. So what we're seeing now is some pretty chilling headline-grabbing stories. of COVID filling up the hospitals with obvious images of what happened in Lombardy, in Italy, back in March. The problem is that hospitals simply aren't being overrun. ICU usage is normal. Nationally, it's a 60%, which is way lower than it was normally for this time of year. And when you look at the number of people in ICU in England for COVID, it stands at something like 12% of the first peak. So the second wave is by no means comparable to the first whatsoever. Yet this perspective is being lost as politicians try to harden up their messages, and you're seeing now a war of words between Number 10 and Andy Burnham. Now, the problem here, of course, is that if your average person hears, picks up a newspaper and hears that the hospital is being overrun, that makes them less likely to seek care when they're suffering chest pain. And that's one of the reasons that we've seen such an increase in at-home deaths since the start of the virus. A lot of people have not been seeking the help which they need. We've had some pretty stunning figures on that today. They're revealed in the Spectator's COVID email, which, by the way, is free if anybody wants to sign up to it. spectator.co.uk/COVID. But we can now see that the number of lives taken as a result of the COVID measures have come to exceed the number of people lost to the virus itself. That's why I think politicians should be very, very careful before they start to spin and exaggerate how bad things are in hospitals. The data shows that NHS is coping. The doctors and nurses are doing an incredible job, and there's no reason at all to avoid your local GP or your local hospital if you're feeling unwell, and more people should know that.
James, Fraser mentioned SAGE and that suggestion of a circuit breaker. Now, I suppose to give a bigger picture on what's happening at the moment, Boris Johnson is clearly coming from resistance from Greater Manchester who don't want to go as far as he wants. But on the other side of the spectrum, there are plenty of people who want him to go further, particularly SAGE. And there's also pressure, I think, across the union if you look at what other parts of the UK are doing. So we have the situation now where Wales is going into a circuit breaker. How does that affect the pressure on Number 10 in terms of their current regional approach?
The different approach has been taken across the UK will now become a kind of test of which one is seen to be most effective. So Jason Leach, the clinical director of NHS Scotland, is saying that, you know, look, the tighter restrictions Nicola Sturgeon imposed there, but are short of what the Welsh have done, has succeeded in slowing the spread of the virus there. So everyone should keep going with that, don't need to go further. I mean, in Wales, if you look at this, given that Merseyside is in Tier 3 and the Wirral are in Tier 3, and North Wales, just on the other side of the border, is now in this firebreak, I think that people will inevitably compare the success of the two relative measures in the next few weeks. Now, I think there's an interesting question about the Welsh firebreak in that it's only going to last for 17 days. Most people think that you need 3 weeks to test the efficacy of an event intervention against COVID. I'm not quite sure how in 17 days' time we're going to know whether the Welsh firebreak has worked or not. I also think it is worth kind of looking kind of broader than just the UK itself. You know, I think it's very interesting that in Ireland 2 weeks ago, the Irish government rejected the proposal from their equivalent of SAGE to move to level 5, which is a kind of soft lockdown. But then yesterday, they relented and agreed to it. And I think this is an interesting tension here. I mean, you see, you know, and the view from Dublin is essentially that the scientists basically kept hammering the politicians about how dangerous it was to carry on with this. And I think this kind of comes back to an interesting point about Fraser's point about ICU usage, right? One of the theories as to why Germany did better in the first wave is because it has more hospital capacity, it took more people into hospital earlier and so had better results. I think part of the problem with this wave is what the government is so worried about is that because we are in October, this is, if you look at the graphs that Fraser was pointing to on the website, you know, this is when you see ICU usage go up. It generally is a bit lower in the summer, it's higher in the autumn and the winter, particularly the winter. And I mean, that's what makes the government so jittery, which is their biggest worry since the beginning of this crisis has been hospitals being overwhelmed and unable to treat not just COVID patients, but patients with other life-threatening, immediately life-threatening conditions. And I think the problem is because we are in autumn and winter, there is really not much slack in the ICU system. And so they are going to be much more nervous, much quicker. But I think there is an interesting question to bear in mind, which was made to me, point made to me by Cabinet Minister back end of last week, which is, you know, how confident are we that what we're not seeing is a kind of university-related spike? And because students are obviously not totally separate, but slightly separate from the rest of the population, that these spikes won't lead to hospital admissions in the same way that they would have done if this was an outbreak within the community itself rather than within a university attached to the community.
And Fraser, when it comes to the justification for these measures, we heard Chris Bryant on Talk Radio, and he was asked by Dan Rutan what evidence there was to suggest that the ICU in his constituency in Wales is higher than it would be year on year. Here's what he had to say.
My local ICU is 75% full.
And how does that compare to last year?
It's about double what it was this time last year.
So you've still got 25% capacity.
Yes, and it's filling very rapidly.
What do you make of that?
I'm afraid to say this is another example of politicians being economical with the truth to try to make a political case. If you actually look at the figures, the high dependency centre has never been lower at 74% capacity in the last 10 years. So the idea that it has doubled, as Chris Bryant was saying, is for the birds. So again, I think there's a real problem, I think, when politicians, let alone journalists, start exaggerating the ICU units being overrun, is that people will be less inclined to seek help. ICU units are always at 70%, 80% capacity, about that. So to take these figures in isolation, again, risks telling people that if they are feeling, I've got chest pain, then they shouldn't turn up to the A&E because hospitals are overrun. I was saying on the podcast last week how I wish there was some kind of statistics watchdog to set the record here, because I really think it matters. This isn't more than just about watching politicians spin. This is about the message that the public are told about whether their NHS is there for them. And right now, the NHS has got plenty of capacity. You can treat anybody who turns up. And this is a message the government really ought to be shouting from the rooftops. But instead, for political reasons, politicians, number 10, they both want to say that the NHS is being overwhelmed. And so you end up with a very dangerous false message being sent out.
Thank you, Fraser. Thank you, James. And thank you for listening.